I want you guys to watch this if you haven't watched it yet. A friend of mine sent it to me. It's on YouTube. It's a local documentary called When Dallas Rocked. Have you seen it, Gordo?
No, I've not even heard of this. I'm excited about it,
I haven't either. It came out a couple of years ago. Kirby Warnock is the guy who put it together. And it's about Dallas music in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And the fact that Dallas, not Austin, but Dallas, was the music capital of Texas and the Southwest during that time frame. Late 50s, into the 60s, all the way until the late 70s and early 80s. For three reasons, according to this documentary. And they had some pretty incredible pictures, not a lot of footage, because a lot of it just doesn't exist. It was so long ago. But because of the venues that we had, places like the Palladium, McFarlane Auditorium, Gertie's, Old Warehouse, the legendary Mother Blues, Adobe Flats, the radio stations. In the early days, it was really the first top 40 radio station in the country.
Wasn't our sister station, KLIF, a pretty big KLIF music station at one point?
Started by Gordon McClendon, and it was huge. And it really started an entire format across the country. And then as we got into the 70s, 1973 is when KZEW went on the air, the Zoo. Later, Q102 went on the air.
That's when FM radio really took off, 70s.
Yes, and album rock. And they hired guys like John Rohde and John Dillon, who are on this documentary. And as they explained, 100,000-watt FM station certainly covered the Metroplex, but it went almost all the way to Oklahoma City. It went to Tyler, went to Waco. If it didn't go all the way to Lubbock, cities like Lubbock would put it on their cable stations as cable came about in the 1970s. And people would listen because no one was doing radio like this. And the other thing about that made Dallas such a hub of music is that every major record label had an office here in Dallas. And it got so big, and many records were not only sold here but stored here. If you bought a record in the Southwest, it came from a warehouse here in Dallas. And that's why bands would start their tours here. And it was kind of a interactive thing between radio, print. Buddy Magazine was basically the Rolling Stone of North Texas. And
God, that used to be
the
huge.
Entire Texas area, really. It was the Texas Music Magazine. And between that and the radio play, that's why groups would gravitate to Dallas, and that's why you would have Eric Clapton, Led Zeppelin, Van Halen, Billy Joel, The Cars, later Bono, hanging out here in Dallas at some of these clubs. And they would hang out here because of the history of people like Freddie King, who we heard there first, doing Hideaway. The fact that the inventor of the blues, Robert Johnson, recorded here in Dallas and Park Avenue, 508 Park, way back in the day. And then, of course, the guitarist out of Oak Cliff, the Vaughn brothers, Jimmy and Stevie Ray Vaughn, Jimmy Wallace, Seeb Meador. And I've heard of some of these names. Rocky Athus is another one. And there were so many great musicians here. Bugs Henderson was another one who's referred to in this documentary. And Dallas was just alive with music and clubs that aren't here anymore. And it eventually moved down to Austin. The record companies left, and we don't have it anymore. It's still a good scene. Deep Ellum, there's still incredible musicians and bands that are around here. But not only were there awesome musicians that were performing here and trying to make it, you know, the Rolling Stones made a point to visit some of these clubs, made a point to go on with either Q102 or The Zoo that covered the 1978 Texas Jam live from the Cotton Bowl And it was just this crazy, as they said, it was Woodstock on AstroTurf. It was Van Halen. It was Willie. It was Journey, Ted Nugent, 2 days of music. And Dallas was the hub, and that really changed. And now so much time has passed. It's a really good documentary in telling the story of Dallas music and where a lot of this came from. And at the end of the film, Kirby Warnock asked the question, so why don't we recognize this? Why don't we have a Stevie Ray Vaughan statue in Dallas? A Vaughn Brothers statue.
We got a Stevie Ray one, right?
Austin does.
I swear they had one down like in Keist Park or somewhere.
The only thing that this documentary said that is at the DART station at Hampton Road, there is a brick pavement area that has lyrics to this song, TikTok.
Huh.
The last song that Stevie and Stevie Ray and Jimmy recorded together. So, yeah, why don't we recognize that? Why don't we recognize Freddie King, who is a Hall of Famer and is looked to as maybe the greatest, most influential blues guitarist ever right here in Dallas?
One of the Three Kings.
Yeah. So here to talk about it with us real quick because we're running out of time, but Robert, why don't we, and if anyone's going to lead the charge, it needs to be our friend Robert Wolanski of Heritage Auctions.
Because Dallas music is terrible.
And of Intentional Grounding. Why don't we do a better job of recognizing this? And I know you've told a lot of these stories, and that's why they sounded so familiar to me during this documentary. But that was my big takeaway, is that we need to somehow recognize this.
So we do have a, Gordon's right, there is a Vaughn Brothers Memorial that Stevie, it's honor Stevie and Jimmy. It's in Keys Park. Kirby actually oversaw kind of securing the city funding for that several years ago, because this documentary is about 11 years old.
Oh, my gosh. I thought it was just a couple of years old.
No, it's 11 years old.
Okay. That makes sense.
So, yeah, there is a something to honor Stevie, although it's not the statue on Town Lake. It does need to be something like that.
Yeah.
There should be a Freddie King statue. There should be a Bob Wills statue. There should be any number of, you know, musicians, and you know, but to me, what's always interesting about this documentary, because I sort of saw it while it was in progress. I was writing about it for The Observer and for the Morning News. So it was kind of interesting to see Kirby work on it, because I knew that period pretty well from a distance. I mean, on my drive to junior high to Spence every day, I would see Gertie's and Mother Blues and all the clubs on Lemon Avenue. And I saw the Hot Club. We drove by the Hot Club on Maple. And the documentary doesn't cover places like the Hot Club. It also doesn't go back all the way to the Longhorn Ballroom and things like that. There's a great, somewhere in this universe, there's a great book, a great documentary just about the Dallas music scene over the course of 100 years.
Yeah.
So it's always been something I've dreamed of doing. But I've always wondered who would read a book about the history of Dallas music.
Well,
maybe you, George.
Yeah, I definitely would. And maybe that's, they do mention the Longhorn Ballroom. They talked about the Sex Pistols being there in the early 80s. And maybe that's where we need this. Maybe that's where outside the Longhorn Ballroom, and those folks have done such a great job in redoing that. And they also own the Kessler, too. Maybe that's where it needs to be.
Well, inside the Longhorn, you know, when they reopened it last year, I mean, it is a museum inside. There is something paying tribute to all the country musicians who played there.
Yeah.
The Sex Pistols, I mean, the blues. It really is a fantastic. The Longhorn Ballroom is right now the best, if not the only, music museum that Dallas has. And there have been talks about it for years. I mean, Angus Wynn, who's in the documentary, who did the Texas Music Pop Festival, he's talked about, he tried for years to get a museum to Fair Park. The city just wasn't playing ball. But we've done a terrible job of honoring the city's history, the city's musical past, the city's. And there's no one place you can go outside of the Longhorn, really, to sort of understand what this city meant to modern music. I mean, look, at one time, the biggest country band in the world was here. The big, you know, the Dixie Chicks, at one time, the biggest metal band, Pantera, at one time, the biggest, you know, every era had the biggest band in some genre at some point from Dallas, or headquartered in Dallas, or living in Dallas-Fort Worth.
Well, as they mentioned, too, the first ever Texas Music Hall of Fame was here. When did that move away? Do you remember the timing on that?
George Mark had one that was overseeing one in Irving. That was a few years ago, but they lost their lease. They lost their funding. It was a nice museum. I mean, it had a pretty good sort of wide-ranging history, all the way from, you know, the Dallas Jug Band to Bobby Patterson and the Telephones and the New Wave period. I mean, yesterday I was just going through my vinyl and taking a bunch of records down to Harry this weekend, and I was going through my Dallas vinyl. I just have 250, 300 records just from spanning, you know, the 1960s alone. The bands that were here in the 60s were extraordinary, because this is, remember, where Steve Miller's band and Boz Scaggs, they had a band out of St. Mark's, the Marksmen.
Okay.
Jimmy Vaughn had his band, the Chessmen.
The Chessmen, yeah. I started jumping down that rabbit hole last night.
And the Nightcaps, who were the biggest influence when Jimmy and Stevie were here. And in fact, ZZ Top stole one of their songs, Thunderbird. I wrote stories about that when the lawsuits were happening in the 90s. I mean, there is no shortage of influential bands. Again, beginning of the turn of the century, 1900s, the Dallas Jug Band was one of the sort of first popular bands during when records became a thing. I think they were Dallas's first big seller, all the way to, you know, today. And, you know, the record companies were here for a long, long time. I mean, even when I was covering music for the Times Herald and the Observer in the 90s, you could still go to Columbia Records headquarters and Elektra Records. They all still had offices here because Sound Warehouse was still open.
Yeah.
Peaches, you know, obviously is a big part of the documentary. I remember going to Peaches all the time with my mom.
Showed the cars there, Gordo.
Really?
Yeah, 1979, signing autographs. And,
oh, man.
And it was also Soundtown. At Valley View had a great record store where Roger Daltrey would go do in-persons.
Yeah.
I mean, there were big, big record stores in every neighborhood. I mean, you couldn't go 2 miles without driving past the Sound Warehouse once upon a time.
And I didn't realize that Peter Frampton, I guess we've talked about this before, Frampton Comes Alive, KZEW was the only station that could play that song because that's where he debuted it for their live room. And that's, he gave Ira Lipson a gold record from KZEW because he felt like he was responsible. All these radio stations around the country would play what was on the Zoo's list because they thought, well, these are the trendsetters. And that's kind of what made Peter Frampton was the Zoo.
It took me years to track down that actual live recording. It was from January Sound. And it is by far better than Frampton Comes Alive.
Really?
I mean, that's the version that was played for years, was the version from that made him who he became, was the version from January Sound Studios.
Yeah. Do You Feel Like We Do was first played on the Zoo.
And, oh, boy.
And that's what launched his solo career after Humble Pie. It's really good. And
so where can we see it? I mean,
it's on YouTube. Yeah, just
watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, just watch it on YouTube.
It's called
When Dallas Rocked.
All right.
I mean, be warned, there's not a ton of music in it. The only real music you're going to hear is, you know, the Vaughn Brothers. Kirby's done a documentary on Stevie and Jimmy as well, which is very good. And I say that not just because I'm in that documentary.
Uh-huh.
You see the band, on something else with Irving Harrigan / Ron Chapman.
You see Five Americans. It's the only surviving footage from the Something Else show, which Ron Chapman used to film at North Park.
Yeah.
And used to air on Channel 8.
No microphones, terrible lip syncing, but it was supposed to be a live performance. But yeah,
live. So, George, there is some audio that survives from Something Else. It's Rocky Erickson and the 13th floor elevators, and they are clearly playing live.
Okay.
And there were a lot of shows that were done out of here as well. There was a soul music show from which there are recordings, which was spectacular.
Yeah. I mean,
there's a very good 2-hour film to be made about, or documentary series about, the part that Dallas played. I've always maintained that, and this is what the documentary stresses more than anything, is that before there was Austin, there was Dallas.
Yeah.
Dallas was the center of the music world for decades.
Well, we
got to
go.
It goes way back to, like, Blind Lemon Jefferson was
Blind
from here.
Blind Lemon Jefferson, yeah. Another one. T-Bone Walker.
T-Bone Walker.
Yeah.
Kimball Walker taught Steve Miller how to play guitar because he was a client of, he was a patient of Steve Miller's father, who was a dentist at White Rock, by White Rock.
That's so crazy.
We need to call Ken Burns. We got to go, but you're the best, and this was eye-opening for me.
Pleasure.
You bet.
Hey, I hope you boys feel better. And, George, when you called yesterday, I thought you were asking if you needed to pick up or you wanted me to deliver the Babe Ruth jersey, so just let me know.
Yeah, George bought that.
You're not supposed to. Don't go public
with that. That is breaking news. Okay, Robert, thank you.
George.
There he goes, Robert Wolanski.